down to the wire, but we made it happen. Here we are on the Backpack Show. Girls, boys, people who identify as neither or both. Happy
biological
Wednesday.
Father.
Steve Brogan, my biological father, has arrived. Hey, Dad, how are you? Hopefully his loving wife, my mom, will arrive. Hi, Michelle. We have a show today. So I guess the final official count around these parts was 18 inches of snow. So that was some snow up here in Boston.
Welcome to the Backpack Show, where we give you a weather update from weather update you probably from don't live.
So we had two guests, but we have the best guest. So we have Dr. Sib on. We're going to talk about a bunch of things. We're going to talk about linking the Underground Railroad to the future of the internet. We're going to talk about adopting new realities. Wow. We have things to get covered today.
Dr. Sib comes to us by way of Dave Delaney, another Nashville person whose whole thing is networking. So that seems appropriate.
Yes. I was thinking, and by the way, oddly, I'm the guest on Dave Delaney's podcast, Nice podcast today. So if you happen to be around, you can check that out. Dr. Sibrel Bennett is also the author of the book, Innovate, Lessons from the Underground. We have so many things to ask her. So it's a big show today. Big, big show. I'm stalling. I can't find the damn button. All right, here you go.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone. Boom shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Boom shakalaka. Kerry, you said you got to go backstage real quick, yeah?
Nope.
Oh, you're good? You fixed it?
Yep.
Oh, all right. Well, that's good. Whatever you need. I'm here for you. Always.
It's fun. We need Dr. Sib is what we need. And we need to learn new things. That's what we're here for.
We have to innovate. We have to do big things. Look at Debbie's here from Women's Leadership Live. Annette Mason. Carol is here again. Good to see you, Carol. Wow.
Annette sent me chocolate, so she's in my good book.
Annette sent amazing chocolates. Those firecracker ones with Pop Rocks in them. Have you ever had chocolate with Pop Rocks? That was
no,
crazy.
And I was not prepared for it because I didn't read the description first. I'm like, firecracker chocolate, whatever. Pop it in the mouth. It was like fizzing in my mouth.
I said swear words because I was like, what the?
It was sort of like eating Rice Krispies, but like with spice and in your mouth.
So, Dr. Sib, I am so excited to drag onto the show. So I'm going to grab her. We're going to start this crazy mad circus. It was a morning. It's been a bit of a morning. If you are here, by the way, it's like Fight Club. You have to fight or just leave a comment and say hi. Well, it's not going to matter as much if we don't have Rose, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do the sponsor. So we're sponsored by PubSite. If you're an author, like you have a cool book like Innovate and you want to make a website, but you don't really want to spend the time to make a cool author website, authors, make your site here, PubSite, pub-site.com. They took all the guesswork out. They put all the best parts in. You have a 14-day free trial. You could make this thing in the first hour of downloading the trial and you'd have 13 and a half days of a free website. And then it's only $19.99 a month.
It's stupid easy to use. And it's very inexpensive. And if you still, even though it's easy, you don't want to do your own website, they'll build it for you for $499.
I have some new sponsor cards I have to load in, I just realized. We're sponsored by StreamYard, cbrogan.me/StreamYard. This is what we use to make this show. It's what makes the show run so easily and smoothly. Dr. Sib came, boom, everything worked. Everything 100% worked, except she had earbuds and AirPods, and we proved yet again that AirPods are the devil.
Look how easy it is to display comments, like Jonathan's listening while driving back from the dentist.
Oh, how'd it go with the dentist, Brew? I need to know. Any cavities? You know, do we get you a lollipop?
Which you make a show about it and we will watch it. Use StreamYard, cbrogan.me/StreamYard.
There you go. Johnsonville is the sponsor. Believe it or not, they send us sausages and we send them to you. Not really. Carry orders them on Instacart.
They do.
Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine having a
delivery today?
Deep freezer of sausages or something like that?
No, but we're doing just one more Johnsonville Appreciation Day. So if you want some sausage and you're willing to send us a video for our video show, then email me at carrie@chrisbrogan.com.
They're not just a sponsor. I buy it. So the new sponsors we have. So first off, I got to remind people that we're on Twitch, twitch.tv/thebackpackshow.
Yesterday, it dropped us for some reason. So
Twitch dropped us in 9 minutes. I watched all 9 minutes. It dropped right in the middle of Mateo, which was not cool.
I think it's bitrate. But anyway, we'll figure it out.
I blame technology. I blame that and tennis. Tennis is a bad sport.
Oh my gosh.
The other thing that we are now sponsored by is Castos. Castos is a podcast hosting site. My friend Matt Medeiros works over there. So I started uploading episodes of The Backpack Show in audio form only so Jonathan Brewer doesn't have to crash his car.
Right.
you know, Brew could, you know, keep his eyes on the road and just keep us in the ear. I tried listening to the whole episode to see how it worked, and there's a few spots where it's clear we're trying to do something visual and you can't see it, but F you, blind people.
Hey, what is wrong with you?
Everything is wrong with me. I just need my Dr. Sib, so I'm bringing her out.
Unbelievable. I'm going to yellow card you for that.
You probably could.
I'm gonna. You just sit right there.
Boom shakalaka! Yellow card, Brogan. And Brogan is going down like a bag of hammers tonight.
You know what's going to be better than a yellow card? A whole yellow room. Hey, Dr. Sib.
Hey.
Hello, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I've been waiting.
I know. What took us so long?
She's such a professional.
I'm sweating.
Been ripped.
With women anticipation, sweat, that's what I would like to think.
We glisten.
You're right. You're right, Carrie. You are right. We glisten.
I say.
My sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Matheson, had a big set of rules about this. It was horses sweat, men perspire, and ladies glow.
Oh, then I'm glowing.
I kind of don't buy that. I quit ballet because the teacher said that you should be able to lay down and get up again off the floor and see your outline in sweat. I said, well, screw that.
That doesn't sound like a plus.
Way too much work.
That doesn't sound like a plus.
That was the day I quit ballet.
I quit tap dancing because my feet grew too fast. I went from tapping to stomping.
Stomp dancing, which became a thing, yeah. You know?
It did.
You could have joined that New York group with the trash cans and all that stuff. They did that. Anyway.
So Dr. I have one point of order.
Oh, please, go.
So,
volume up just a little, too.
I don't use my last name on purpose.
Oh.
Especially in digital space. This is a great conversation for different people.
Good.
You get married, you change identities, whatever the case may be. In the digital world, we need a consistent identity.
My
consistent identity is just Dr. Sib, period. Like Dr. Phil, Dr. Dre, Dr. Seuss. The reason for that, it sounds cool as all get out, but also because my last name is not Bennett, it's Brown.
Oh.
So Bennett went with the ex-husband.
Oh.
Brown will stay with me forever.
It's a better name.
But you just skip it.
It's so common.
It's so hard to change your Twitter handle too. In March it'll be 21 years I've been married. I'm still sitting on two Twitter handles because you just never know, right? It's really hard.
That's why I just cut out, you know, because when I remarry, because I'm being positive, when I remarry, if I change last names again, you know, in social media space, that's just too much.
So Kate wants to know how old I was when I quit ballet. Like how many years was my ballet career? I want to say I was like 10, like at the oldest. And I was a lazy child. So great.
I just copped your last name off your Innovate book cover. That's why I got it.
Yeah. And I argued. At that time, I allowed someone else to make a decision for me. Another mistake in life. Letting someone else make your decisions. So I knew at that time that I should have kept my maiden name. You know, my name that's going to stay with me no matter what. But at the time, I lost the argument over my life.
There's
never
a lesson in
an argument over your life.
So you're a tiny bit quiet. If you could boost your volume, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But I know things were a little crazy backstage. So
hold on. Is that better?
Marginally. Can you go a little more? No, we're not talking the speaker because you should be able to hear us just great.
Right.
But you're going to be wanting to hit your microphone button somewhere.
Let me see. Hold on.
There's a little gear.
We'll get this all worked out.
Okay. While we're doing that, you're going to look for a little gear that says something about audio and microphone and that sort of thing.
So it's
got
very
it.
Thank you, Debbie from Women's Leadership Live says, name is the claim per Stacey.
That's
so the
smart.
Interesting thing, I graduated law school and I had like gotten married over spring break that year. And so I had them put all three names on my degree because I was like, you never know.
Oh, right.
And I wanted to have options. So
are we in better business?
Let's just go with it.
We're good. We're good. It sounds good enough.
Yep. We'll go with it.
You know, the fun of technology.
Oh, so, you know that comment about the law and the last name. I had to pay because when in my divorce decree, I did not state that I wanted my last name to change. At the time, my daughter was little and I wanted to keep the last name the same. Well, because I didn't put it in the divorce decree, I had to go back to court later and pay $250, I believe it was, to change my name.
So
that's just
again.
Something. Since somebody made a comment, I wanted to react to the comment.
You bought your name back. Right?
I did.
They are indeed.
Oh, on Summerhill 369, we do record these. You can go to thebackpackshow.online, and there's an episodes tab, and you can see 200-ish episodes, including the best one, which is Dr. Sib, of course.
And Chip is going to keep his name till he has to change his identity to get away, so I think that's probably good advice.
That's pretty smart.
There's my degree up there, can you see, with my both names up there. I was like, I'm getting them all.
Case in point.
I keep them in front of me, not behind me, because no one's interested. That's why I arrange my office this way.
Where are mine? I don't even know now. They've been, you know, because we're remote learning now.
Oh, right.
Might be on campus. By the way, I'm a professor at the Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. I must say that. Professor of journalism. Yeah. Did television news for 20 years. So I worked at CBS Chicago, ABC in Milwaukee, and CBS in Nashville.
We're so together.
Yeah, I ripped scripts for Bill Curtis and the Lester Holt, who was
That's some bona fides. That's impressive.
Walking with greatness.
That's impressive. So in the whole land of journalism and all that, and then having to be where you are now, the last couple of years maybe made us all have to rethink journalism a little bit more again. I know this isn't really the topic that we had set up, but whatever. We have lots of time to talk with you today. Let's talk about it.
Let's go.
What are you telling people now? Like, we did not know journalism was warfare. Like, you know, we could embed journalists in wars. I remember Wolf Blitzer in the first Desert Storm with his little, you know, armor suit on and all that. But it wasn't like this. What's the new version of talking to people about this in your class, or have you got there yet? What's that like?
Well, journalism isn't going anywhere. It's protected in the Constitution and the First Amendment, which was ratified December 15, 1791. Then Thomas Jefferson said we needed a fourth estate to keep a system of checks and balances on the government, which is why we don't license journalists. We train them, but we don't license them because it's protected. So it's gone through many evolutions and it's survived like our democracy. You know, you need journalism, you need democracy. Both go hand in hand. So our students are actually more excited because they realize they're covering history in real time, like real deep depths of history. So it's actually growing in a strange way.
The changes I see as well are that we used to just have to assume that what somebody told us was the fact. There's good investigative journalism where you go and kind of dig up and corroborate and kind of make sure everything's checked out. But, you know, we kind of would expect that a press briefing perhaps was going to be that, or that we'd expect that the coverage of an event like a, you know, an important protest in places like Portland would only have a single side of perspective, you know, one point of view, like, hey, look, there's this thing going on, but that's not there anymore. There's two coverages of every story. And it's like that awful adage about the, you know, your word, my word, and the truth. That's not what journalism was meant to make that get out of the way. We're supposed to be able to get information that we could make decisions on.
But one of my late friends who I loved, former professor who passed away, retired professor, Dr. Don Page, years ago, I said, it is what it is. He said, it is what you perceive it to be. Mm. So even when truth is truth, there's still an individual's perception of it. So primarily what we teach is verify, verify, verify from multiple sources, not the same source. You know, you guys are fully aware of confirmation bias, looking for information that confirms what you already believe. Well, in order to challenge that, I have to go out and look at other sources just to see if the information is consistent, or maybe there is something I'm not thinking of. We were laughing earlier, Carrie, you know, being post 50, you realize you don't know what you think you knew, meaning you could be wrong about something.
Because I'm wrong about so many things, Dr. Sim.
You know, my dad used to say, the older you get, the dumber you get. Mm-hmm. And it was an insult. You know, when I was a kid, I'm like, oh, that's just cruel. That's mean. But as I got older, I'm like, the older you get, the dumber you get. And really, to me, that's the more humble you get, because you realize what you don't know. The best example, and it comes the book, Innovate. I wasn't taught the Civil War the same way people in the South were taught. I grew up in the Midwest. I'm a Navy brat. I grew up in Illinois. So we weren't taught the Civil War the way it was taught, say, in Tennessee, where I am now. And so even that vantage point is different.
That's so interesting, isn't it? I felt very strange moving from the North to the South because there is so much Civil War history here. And it's, obviously we're all part of it in some way, but the people who've grown up here feel part of it in a very different way than I do. it's a weird, like, sort of discordance.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. And they're very serious about it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But again, there's different perspectives. Everyone isn't getting the same information the same time, the same way. You know, it's the filter bubble online. We all Google the same thing and we get different results.
So tell me a little bit about the book, because you also have a TED Talk, right? Are they the same subject, the TED Talk and the book?
Yes. So Innovate Lessons from the Underground Railroad argues that the Underground Railroad is among the most effective, innovative, and disruptive networks in U.S. history. Arguably, the internet will be too. But of course, that history is being written in real time now. But fundamentally, I use the work of Dr. Clayton Christensen, Harvard University professor who passed away last year. And he warned us, you know, what happened to encyclopedias? What happened to Kodak? You know, what happened to Blockbuster? So we want to sit here and pretend like disruption isn't happening at lightning speed as fast as a Google search in real time. But it's been happening. Things appearing outside of an existing market. They come in from down market. So the market is there. But you're meeting an audience that's been ignored or overlooked, or you're meeting a need that that current traditional product isn't meeting. And then you can disrupt the entire business and industry. And, you know, we've seen this over and over, journalism, book publishing, music industry, et cetera.
Yogurt.
It's in plain sight. Movie industry. Netflix is going to be a $1 trillion business in the blink of an eye because it pivoted. So the Underground Railroad was a pivot from the industry of slavery.
I want to just use that as a quick segue. We have so much more to talk about with Underground Railroad, but you know, when you said movie industry and all that, here's where I was on my screen. So we gotta show a little something here. Pay close attention to the background with Mr. Elba. It's hard to take your eyes away, but notice that pink outfit right there. And then notice Idris's face.
Oh. That was the actress in me.
Oh, look at you.
Oh, look at this. Wow, that's fun.
I would never wash my arm again.
But they wanted me to sit down, and I'm not familiar with as many of his movies. You know, you're watching him.
Could have gone horribly wrong.
So I was terrified to sit in the chair because I was scared they were going to quiz me on his movies.
You were like, well, the two I've seen were like really good.
Right.
But I know you mostly from The Office.
Right. You know, I'm like, Daddy's Little Girl, Tyler Perry. That's the one I've seen him the most. And most recently,
I saw
Bastille Days. And that was really good. It's a different name in America, though.
Those are two movies that I would not consider Idris Elba movies. Also, like that's a very
I'm telling you, I can do some of the Marvel, but I'm bad.
Much of life is just like being ready to get up and talk to Idris Elba when he talks to you?
Like, we found out there was a rumor. We were in New York. It was a rumor that he was going to be on the show that day. Now, mind you, everybody thought I had used my connections from television to get to the show. I didn't. I went online like everybody else and ended up in that queue that put me on the front row. It was just all destined. And so I'm a very positive person as much as I can be. And I spoke. I was telling Chris, I spoke it. I was sick that morning. Sinuses were killing me. I couldn't breathe up half the night. And I was like, I'm going to meet Idris Elba. And I went back to sleep. I didn't know how. Didn't even realize I really said it until after the fact. And then it happened.
The world changes so fast.
Now, see, but what I love about you is you didn't have like a copy of your book with you. Because some people do that.
Right?
I've seen people do that.
I don't even have one now. I don't even think to, you know what, let me put a copy of my book right here, which I have to grab one in a minute. But I did remember my Belmont, you know. I try to remember. And I'm a mom. My daughter's there too, so I'm very grateful for that. Yay.
People in a situation where a lot of people are being interviewed, like in succession. I've seen one person in the group walk up and give their book to the interviewer, who then has to hold it the whole friggin' time while they interview person after person after person. So thank you for not being that person.
I'm horrible. For those of you out there who need to market, do your marketing better, because I'm horrible. I really am.
I like your way better.
I just, you know, it things happen when they're supposed to happen. You know, we were laughing about birthdays coming so fast. You know, when you get older, you know, as a kid, you're out there on the street corner looking for your birthday. Like, when is my birthday coming? You know, you get older, you're like, wait a minute. You know, who put the foot on the gas? Can we slow down a little bit?
I just ignore him or change him to 29 again, like I did this year.
Idris Elba might be the star of a lot of people's show, but you're the star of our show. And so we get a chance to look at you in Nashville doing TEDx, talking all about how the Underground Railroad might be back.
Yeah, it never turned us, it. It never ended.
Give us a little praises about that. You know, can you share the secret with us just a tiny little bit?
Fundamentally, it's that disruption. It's the underestimating people. When you underestimate an entire group or identity or institution, you know, just ignoring people is a dangerous practice. It was a leaderless movement. There was no leader, therefore you couldn't destroy it. You know, we see that in modern day with the Tea Party and other parties that have bubbled up. You really don't know who's in charge of it, Black Lives Matter, etc. So you don't know who's in charge of the movement, and therefore it makes it much more difficult to destroy. And the Underground Railroad was one of the first documented in America to do that. So a lot of times, unfortunately, it's Black History Month, obviously, but, and that's not why they invited me either, folks. It just so happened, a mutual friend, Dave Delaney, recommended me, and it happened to be February. Unless Carrie and Chris, y'all need to say something.
No, we've been doing the show since July, and if you look, our roster is packed with all different types of people.
Exactly. So. We just want to make that caveat.
I keep making the joke, it's Black History World from now on. Like, it's not a month. You don't get the month, you get the world.
So that's why. But so basically the book is just helping us reframe history. And you know, there's a lot of movements now pulling from history to inform the present. Right. And so when you look at the Underground Railroad, it's a great opportunity. You know, one of my favorite chapters, I'll share perspective, your mindset. So at the Battle of Gettysburg, Lincoln was in the White House. He switched out leadership. He, on the Union side, he changed General Hooker to General Meade in the middle of the battle at Gettysburg. At that time, General Stonewall Jackson had been killed at the battle at Chancellorsville in friendly fire. Now, Stonewall had lived. Some historians argue I wouldn't be talking to you. I could possibly still be enslaved had Stonewall lived. But because General Lee was like Wimpy on Popeye when it comes to hamburgers, you know, if it would be so kind of you and could you possibly fight this enemy and win for us, pretty please. He was very much a different style of leader than Stonewall. So on the other side, Meade said, I don't care what your rank is. I don't care what your title is. I need all of the intel that you have. What is the terrain? How many food rations do we have? How many people are down? They also instituted the triage system where they treated the most severely injured soldiers first. So the Union was innovating constantly. They also took the immigrants from Italy and Poland, et cetera, older countries who had been to war before. So they knew how to switch their perspective, switch their mindset. And this is a very critical piece of the puzzle. You know, Dr. Carol Dweck has the book Growth Mindset, and many people are talking about grit. Angela Duckworth also has a TED Talk online about grit, resilience. You know, this is where we are in the midst of a pandemic. I'm exhausted. I don't know about you guys. Like, I wanted to do the show, but then there was like a, oh God, I gotta be on. I don't want to be on, but by the same token, I don't want to be dead either. So it's trying to figure out the balance. So all of that comes into play. I know that's a serious segue, so I'll toss to you to see if you want to respond to that. But I can always link it back to innovate very easily.
I'm just appreciative of your journalistic background and the fact that, you know, you run circles around us. You're just being kind to us right now.
How did you go from TV to academic? Like, how does that
position go? You want to know so the backstory is this.
I do.
I went to Catholic schools all of my life. So the nuns beat me into submission. So I'm a product of the nuns, meaning education has always been in my DNA. It's a part of me. So even when I'm on air, no matter what I'm doing, I'm educating. No matter, I can go through the drive-through at McDonald's or wherever, let me be clear. I'll drive through at Panera or wherever and talk to somebody and say, hey, are you in school? What are you doing? You know, that's my normal thing. So going from education to journalism made sense. the piece of it is, as a woman, as a human being, because I can only talk as a woman, though, I wasn't paid or promoted. So whenever I didn't get paid or I didn't get promoted, I got pissed and I went and got a degree. Mm. Every time I got mad, I got a degree. And so it worked out. And one of my colleagues said, the earlier you get your PhD, the longer you make PhD money. Not to say that there's a lot there. There isn't a lot in PhD money unless you get to certain places and spaces. Mm-hmm. But you can leverage the platform to do other things and to do greater good. But fundamentally, the jump came because... Oh, I'm sorry, Carrie. This is even better. I've got a better story. This is even better. So I go to a little old country church in the woods, whom I love, my St. John. Love you guys if you guys are watching. So my pastor stopped Sunday morning service one Sunday. I was still working at CBS in Nashville reporting. I had to leave every Sunday around 1 o'clock to make it to work on time. Well, a lady came to visit. She's also an author, Wanda Lloyd. Her book is out as well. And give me a minute. She's going to kill me. My mentor book isn't coming to me. It's going to come
to me. I'll get it.
But I met Wanda and just said hello, exchanged cards in the middle of service, stopped it. You two exchange cards. I said, okay, we exchange cards. I leave. She's on the search committee at Belmont. And they were looking for a minority with a PhD in broadcasting. Yes, coming full circle. Wanda Lloyd, love you. Forgive my brain. So yes. So I met Wanda. She was on the search committee and I met all of the criteria. Plus I had teaching experience and television experience. So that was 18 years ago.
I love that you say the nuns broke you. So surprising no one, if you know me, my mom went to Catholic school and the nuns had to put tape over her mouth to shut her up. She talked too much. And they were like, that's enough
for
you.
Baby, if they could, they would have. But my mother was and still is no joke, baby. They did not want to call her from work. They were like, do not call Sib's mom to this school. So I get paid to talk now. Now what?
Yep. Well, it didn't work. I'll just put that out there right now. So had they gone there, I think they would have been disappointed in the results. We had one comment from Kate Colgan asking about you talking about being a late discovery adoptee, which is a whole nother part of your personal journey. You want to talk? Are you okay talking about that? I know you have a video series about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No problem. I'm very careful about how I talk about it. So please don't think that I'm being dishonest. I'm being very careful to protect other people because as one of my siblings told me, this is your journey, not ours. Mm-hmm. And so the day before my 42nd birthday, one of my favorite aunts, get in trouble already. One of my favorite aunts passed away. Oh. And a cousin called and said, so-and-so passed away. And I said, okay, it was expected. She was 95. So we were like, okay. So I said, great. I get to go to another family funeral where I look adopted. And she said, that's because you are. Now, I've suspected this my whole life. As a kid, I'm looking around. A bear cannot raise a lion undetected. A bear cannot raise a lion undetected. And that's a quote in my forthcoming book on my life story. So looking around, genetically, you have nothing in common with anybody. And what people don't like to talk about with adoption is how traumatic it is for the baby. It's traumatic. You won't take a puppy from its mama. You won't take a dog from its mama when it's born. But you'll take a human from its mama to feed a $14 billion business. Now, adoption is necessary, in my personal opinion, when the mother is dead or beyond rehabilitation. Not when she's broke, not when you're ashamed she got pregnant as a teenager because you let your uncle rape the kid or whatever the case may be. It's not out of shame and guilt. That's not what adoption is about. Or because I don't want to ruin my body giving birth to a baby, so I'm going to buy someone else's. This is causing trauma, unrealized trauma. And please don't run to any adoptee and ask crazy questions or torture them. How do you feel? I raised you well, didn't I? You know, so as an adoptee, you got all this trauma that builds up and there's no place to let it go. There's no place that's safe because whenever I mention this, everybody's got an opinion, but they're not a late discovery adoptee using an amended birth certificate. I have to use a birth certificate that has a different name, different parents, and different hospital where I was born. The hospital is fabricated. I legally have to still use that document, but I'm supposed to keep it real. Boom. Now what? Which I want next.
Hmm. That's so late in life to figure it out. Right, that's one thing.
So the video show that you do where you talk about this with other people who were adoptees.
Yes, Dr. Katari right? Coleman and Dr. Angel Richardson both are adoptees as well, but they were told. They knew they were adopted.
And so is that better? Like, did that work out better for them? I wasn't adopted, so I can't
speak
to it.
It's different layers of it. Most adoptees, not all. I'm not speaking for all adoptees. Right. I'm speaking for me as a late discovery adoptee. And I'm looking at the literature. I've done a lot of research. So there's a book called Primal Wound by Dr. Nancy Verrier. And in it, she talks extensively about just the differences of when you tell a person and not telling them. For late discovery adoptees, most of us were products of closed adoptions. They're my colleagues, Dr. Katari, friends, sisters, Dr. Katari Coleman, Dr. Angel Richardson. So, and Dr. Angel Richardson is actually a therapist. So most of us who were not told were products of what are called closed adoptions. So many people legally have to go to court. Yes, Janice, legally have to go to court to get the original birth certificate. And the only reason mine was available, sadly, was part of the reason is because my mother was deceased. So in 2011, Illinois opened the birth records. In 2012, I was able to get my birth certificate. At the time, I wasn't realizing it was because my mother wasn't alive to stop it. Because they asked the birth mother still, is it okay for us to release this birth certificate, even though the adoptee may be 40, 50, 60 years old? He or she still may not have a right to their identity. Of course, with Ancestry.com and Facebook, relatives are being identified left and right, and it's cause for some very awkward, good, unusual, atypical reunions. Oh, so Dr. it's Sam. A whole, you guys.
Ew, layers, mean, layers upon layers upon
it's
layers.
A can of worms. We can go as deep as you want, whatever topic y'all want to do. I'm a mixed master. I can roll with you as hard as I can roll. So whatever you need, I got you.
Well, what was occurring to me was that maybe, I know this just because I actually have a brother who was adopted, but you feel driven to achieve in a way.
Carrie.
So did that play a role in your journey as well? Or were you were already like 3 degrees in?
Well, interestingly enough, the book Primal Wound was very grounding for me because in it, she talks about the extremes. So the extremes are this. A disproportionate number of adoptees are addicted and they're not connecting it to the trauma because you're fine. You had great parents. The adoption washed away your mom and dad. You have no genetic memory. So a lot of adoptees are traumatized and don't realize it. So they're addicted, unfortunately, disproportionate number. On the other end, we're overachievers because we're not good enough. I lost my mother at birth. You took her voice. You took her smell. You took her sound. They didn't even let her hold me. And she wanted me. So now you're looking at a person who keeps getting degrees, keeps doing stuff, and still doesn't feel good at times. My friends all the time, Siv, you got this award, you got that honor. How do you feel? I'm okay. Why aren't you excited? I don't know. I'm grateful, but I'm just not. My ego was compromised. And in some ways, I guess that's helpful so that I'm not so egotistical, but it's also harmful because I'm not really my full self, but I'm working on it.
So first off, you know, when you were saying about no genetic memory, that's interesting all on its own. I mean, that's 30 minutes at least. But you're this whole idea, the Underground Railroad to the new Underground Railroad and everything in between, you mentioned about Facebook. Facebook is uncovering people who didn't exist before, who didn't have that voice, did not have the connection to the tree. It also is the Underground Railroad and that way of helping people try to escape and get out. In some ways, it's even harmful in that way. It's harder to hide in a digital world. So if someone doesn't want to be found, it's a tough world too. Is that something you've covered or looking at, or, you know, what's your perspective on that?
It all comes together. So I've created this whole idea, curriculum, movement, adopting reality. So as we're adopting reality, so I'm dealing with adoption, double entendre. I'm also dealing with adopting reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, etc. So as I'm digging deeper, all of this merges for me. So here comes another book, you know, that false self that adoptees experience, because I'm my false self. You killed whoever I was at birth. You killed her. You know, what name is God going to call? The name on my original certificate or the one you fabricated? Which one? So, and it doesn't mean I'm not grateful. I love my adopted family. They were good to me and are good to me. And that's my mama. I'll tell anybody. Well, somebody say, mom, this, that, up. That's my mama. Y'all know who I'm talking about when I say mama. I have one mama. I had one mother. So let me be clear. I have to always have to clear that up. Mm-hmm. And don't come for mama. My mama's 88. She will meet you. Don't come for her. She will meet you. So, because people always want to know how she feels. I'm like, you better leave my mama alone. Y'all know. People who know, know. But those of you, borrow the lesson. So,
what did mama do growing up besides raise you, which is a pretty full-time job? Let's agree with that.
She worked for a major pharmaceutical company, and my dad was an insurance agent.
Oh, wow.
And he's retired Navy. He served 21 years in the United States Navy. So I've always been atypical. I mean, in every category, I'm an anomaly. And so I'm used to being an anomaly, but I've never embraced it. I always spent a lifetime trying to fit in, trying to belong, and never feeling like you belong anywhere. And that's common among some adoptees, not being able to fit in. And therefore, the overachiever and the addiction, the extremes. Real sad note, and people don't want to talk about it. The first question I ask in mass shootings now is the person adopted? But see, the media hasn't picked up on that question. The Parkland shooter, if you go back, the Washington Post did a profile of the little boy who shot the people up, young man who shot the people up in Parkland, Florida. He was adopted. His whole profile is textbook adoptee issues. But people don't want to acknowledge it because it would challenge the money. It will challenge the industry. Now, there are well-adjusted adoptees. I'm pretty much a well-adjusted adoptee. I really am, for the most part. However, my relationships have been trash. My relationships have been absolute trash, because how do you attract a real person when you were false? You were using your false self. I didn't know who I was until I'm 42. Well, heck, I got all kind of bodies on the field because I'm trying to look for love and chase people, because I'm chasing my mother unconsciously, repeating that abandonment cycle over and over and over again. So this is why I'm speaking up and speaking out, because people need help and don't realize it. You're unhealthy. You are torturing somebody in a relationship right now because of your trauma, and you don't even realize what it is because you don't want to admit it's connected to being adopted, because you feel disloyal to your adopted family for telling the truth about how you feel. Because you're supposed to be grateful, which is the worst thing in the world to tell an adoptee, is to be grateful. Stop it.
Well, I don't tell people who've had an experience I haven't. I don't tell them anything. I really try to just listen.
But you'd be surprised, Carrie, how many people tell you be grateful. And it's like Professor Paul Sunderland has some really good YouTube videos. Paul Sunderland. And he talks about how telling us to be grateful is really disingenuous and dangerous in mindfulness and counseling, because you're basically telling me to be grateful I lost my mother. Everybody else gets a funeral for their mother. Everybody else gets to grieve their mother. But adoptees who were ripped from our mothers at birth, get over it. You don't remember her. Yes, I do. And I look, baby, that's the picture I should have sent, but I'm going to save it. But when I tell you I look like my mother, like when I shared a picture with my friends, they thought I had done an age progression joke. They were like, quit playing. That's how much I looked like my mother.
Wow. So, so deep. There's so many layers. So I'm trying to unravel, like, all the things you've accomplished, all the interests you've explored, all the topics that you've thrown yourself into, and now coming at it from this angle, it all looks very different. It's like you just turn the dial just a little to the left, and now everything is, I can see it all a little differently. What motivates and drives you?
It's age-related. I'm post-50. You notice when you turn 50, Chris, you say, I'm 50. When you're in your 50s, you say, I'm in my 50s. So I'm proud in my 50s. So, and I'll make you laugh real quick. We are Gen X, that pissed off generation y'all keep ignoring with all the wisdom and the information and the experience. We know what Atari is. We know what analog is. We know what digital is. Quit ignoring Gen X. Okay, that was my plug for Gen X. Breakfast Club forever. All right. So, Journey, Open Arms, Prince, all of that. Got Prince on. Hello.
Look at this Prince shirt. This is so great. Oh my gosh.
Have to show him a print shirt.
Oh, I love it. I got my Ahsoka shirt.
I see. As it's coming together, you know, as I'm connecting the dots the best way that I can, I do a lot of awareness Power of Now. I do a lot more breathing. Follow neuroscientist Andrew Huberman. This is another, I told Chris I'm a comedian in my mind. So remember, if you got beat back in the day, because see, Gen X knows about beatings. So even if you didn't get one, you saw somebody else. Mm-hmm. So have you ever seen somebody who cries like this? So you got that person that cries like that. You got the other person who cries like this.
I'm Irish. We just don't cry.
I know, right? So, but the one who cries like this is calming their nervous system. And it's an unconscious thing that you're not even paying attention to. Andrew Huberman says, even Navy SEALs, anybody in a real stressful situation, take those two quick breaths and then exhale through your mouth. So two quick ones through your nose, out through your mouth, and keep doing that until you regulate your system. And so that helps with stress. So all of these revelations, Carrie, are coming in real time. You know, I'm talking to you guys. That's what I was sharing with you. You're the first show to interview me about it. You know, we've done the show, myself, Dr. Coleman, and Dr. Richardson. We've done the show, but this is my first real in-depth interview, even to get my thoughts straight, you know, and to be real. You know, I try not to censor myself to the point that I'm not honest and real about things. And this isn't an all or none. I know my voice is deep as people listen to me. She's an authority. I have a deep voice. It's God-given. I accept it now. I'm mistaken for a man on the phone, which drives me nuts. But it's the voice I have. It's the voice the nuns could hear. I couldn't whisper, Carrie. I'm like your mama. I could not whisper. I know they wish they could put tape over my mouth, but they couldn't. But I am who I am. And I'm really striving hard. One of my friends, it's funny, and she's on here. I don't want to say her name online, so, but you know who you are.
A friend of yours online watching right now.
Yeah, a friend of mine watching. Because I'm protective, careful about who I say right. What, where. But, we were just talking about that, and she was like, I finally see you spreading your wings. You know, my friends are like, we finally see you. Because psychologically, when you're somebody else's child, you're always trying to please them. You're always trying to be what they expect you to be, even if they don't expect you to be anything per se. You know, my mom always says, just be the best. Be your best. Excuse me. Do your best. Excuse me. Do your best. She never told me to be better than anybody else. She never said you weren't good enough. She just always says, do your best. Do your best. So in that, all these life lessons are coalescing at one time because I'm post 50. And we're in a pandemic. And I've been forced. All of my outlets have been cut off. I'm a Chicago stepper. I love Chicago stepping. I love my Belmont women's basketball team. I can watch them online. And I go to church. I love to sing. I've been singing since I was 5 years old. Not to say I can sing. I'm not a singer, but I sing.
But you love to sing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so all of my outlets are now cut off. So I've had to go within. You know, I've had to go even deeper than I want to go. I'll share something real quickly that happened recently. And this is full disclosure. This is one of those vulnerable moments that I'm learning to have better.
Okay.
So thought I was about to have a relationship, a healthy relationship. I was hopeful. Somebody I knew. So there was a modicum of trust already. And I explained to them, hey, I can't do the back and forth thing, the disappearing. Disappearing harms me. And I explained that. And I don't need to talk every day, all day. Nobody has time. Who got time for that? Nobody's got time to talk to you all day, every day, text all day. But be consistent. I need communication, consistency, and commitment. When I tell you this person I knew, we got people in common, went ghost, and I'm still trembling from that. I'm strengthening. I'm powering up because it's not my issue. It's that person's issue.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't me. But in the past, that would have been me. In the past, I would have chased. I would have called. I would have texted. I would have shown up. I would have done all these crazy things that I did do. People don't even believe what I did because I am who I am. So I have some cover. Mm-hmm. Some of those things I did do. They called me church girl growing up. Some of those things church girl did do, but nobody believes it. Literally.
Oh, isn't that the best? Like, I'm always honest about the stuff I used to do with my mom. They didn't believe me at the time. I was honest then.
They don't.
They didn't believe it. I was like, oh, I slept in some guy's trunk at a party because he was getting fresh and I didn't want him touching me and I couldn't go home. So like in the trunk. They were like, ha ha ha.
In the snow.
You're so funny.
Mad Dog 2020 had me walking barefoot in the snow with the shoes on my hands. That happened. And there were witnesses, but they're beautiful and don't say anything.
Thank God there wasn't YouTube. You talk about being Gen X. Is that not one of the very best things about being Gen X, is that we didn't have to have YouTube in college and high school? Come on now.
As the comedian says, we can say not to our recollection.
Nope. Exactly. It's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Your words make no sense right now. So the new book then will explore some of this, all of this.
Yes. The new book is exploring. I'm 150 pages in for my friends who are eavesdropping right now.
So, Gen X is the antisocial network.
You know what? Our middle child syndrome is blessing us right now. Gen X is in an ideal situation because we're being overlooked, which actually is good. We have cover. And so we're taking care of parents, grandparents, children, grandchildren. That's why we're not out here protesting. That's why you're not seeing as many of us involved, because we're holding it together. And let us be clear, don't mess with our Social Security.
No.
We're going to have some issues up in this piece.
You're not kidding. It's my recollection. I got really good at three things when I was growing up, like getting very good grades so nobody would ever have questions, being where I was supposed to be when I was supposed to be there, and doing whatever else I wanted the rest of the time, and not lying about it, but not having people believe me because it didn't seem to fit with those other two things. So.
Exactly. Right. Three truths and a lie, I win every time.
Yes. You're a good winner at that game. Dr. Sib, there's a poem I love that every time I wheel it out, people are like, I don't expect this to be your poem. I actually don't like poetry very much, so it's double dip on this one. But okay. I was thinking about you so much when you were saying some of the stuff you were saying, and especially just kind of like where we are, what seat we're at right now.
Okay.
And it's a warning by Jenny, what's her name? When I am old, I shall wear purple. By the way, the first person I ever saw say this was Maya Angelou, and she said it sometime after being the poet laureate for Bill Clinton. And so in my head, I have always thought this was a Maya Angelou poem. I didn't even know she was reading somebody else. Okay. When I'm old, I should wear purple with a red hat, which doesn't go and doesn't suit me. And I'll spend my pension on brandy and summer gloves and satin sandals and say we've got no money for butter. I'll sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and I'll gobble up samples in shops and I'll press alarm bells. And I'll run my stick along the public railings and I'll make up for the sobriety of my youth. I shall go out of my slippers in the rain, and I will pick flowers in other people's gardens and learn to spit. Now, there's so much more to this poem, but don't you feel that?
Living life. It's finally about letting go.
Jenny Joseph. That's called Warning by Jenny Joseph. And I love it.
I have no idea. Thank you guys who are commenting. I have no idea what I'm going to say at any given time. I'm very spiritually led. I'm a professional speaker. So if you need me for your events, I can do anything.
You'll know then.
I can do anything.
I believe that with every fiber of my being.
Yeah.
I watched your TED Talk, so I know that this is somebody that you need to have on your stage. But Dr. Sib, we've come to this point in the show. We're here. We're at the end. We're like, what could we possibly do more? So we have three things we got to do more. One's this.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
I have to do this. Stubble Judge is our person of the day.
You're unbelievable. We should each get to pick a person of the day.
All right. Who's your person of the day then?
Janice.
Oh, Janice definitely deserves person of the day.
For opening up about her own.
Well, thank you, Janice.
Janice, that meant a lot, by the way. That was really good. So and by the way, Ms. Jackson's here, Ramona Jackson, the Bourbon Bohemian. She came by to say hi. So.
Oh, she's amazing.
I love your hair.
Mine is like
this, but right now it's hidden under this wig. So it's cute.
Ramona makes custom cocktails and sends out like monthly cocktail kits. She can do cocktails for events. So like all we need to do now is get you keynoting an event and then she can make the custom cocktail for it and send all the attendees like a kit so you can make it at home because pandemic and all that.
If somebody could help make that happen, I need somebody to organize
perfect me. Event.
I have no organizational, you know, I'm the one that if you say go do it, I got it. But organizing, not my strong suit.
Apples for the Stubble Judge and Janice.
That was so great. Now we have the last question of the show. And we've asked every single person who's come on the show this question. And it's basically, what goes in your backpack? Now the world is crazy. It's shifting sands. Nothing's the same. You can't bring everything with you. So you got a backpack worth of space. You could put either one physical or one metaphorical item in there. So a good physical item might be delicious bourbon. Metaphorical could be something like hope, like, you know, Shepherd Farley. But Carrie, what's some of your favorites? What's a favorite on either side of the equation?
I have a couple. So for physical, Whiskey Nate had said a book you hate, with the idea that, like, eventually if it's the only book you have, you'll learn something from it because you'll have to. And An Extra Set of Teeth. That was DJ Cummerbund. It's a remix artist. And then as far as more metaphorical goes, I really liked Horacio Garcia Rojas said Pride, like in Where You Come From, because he's an actor on the world stage, but he's from Mexico City and he has that pride of place, and that's part of his identity. I love that. What about you, Chris? I know what one of your favorites is.
My favorite physical item is an avocado. That was a professional humanitarian clown, Saida Trujillo. She's from Clowns Without Borders. They land in places where there's been a lot of trauma, and they bring clowns.
They just, like, parachute in. I mean, they're invited.
I imagine them in a parachute. I imagine them having to tuck and roll in their little as they hit the ground. And I don't have a favorite metaphorical one. I just make it up every time. Dr. Sib, what goes in the backpack today?
Thank you. You guys stalled long enough for me to think of something. No, the first thing I thought was love. Because what the world needs now more than ever is love, sweet love. That's the only
thing. We get song lyrics in every show, and it's usually Chris, and today it's you. This might be a first.
Family. We're kindred spirits. See, kindred spirits come together for a reason at the right time. So I would say, and my phone. I have been a phoneaholic since I was a child. So when you give me a phone that I can carry with me, it's not going anywhere. I'm sorry. So my dad put a phone in my room. I was like 10 years old. I didn't ask for it. But my mom bought me a shirt years ago. Help, I can't get off the phone. I can't shut up. And it's the phone, you know, it's the phone. So the phone, because it's digital and because it has all my pictures, it pulls together all the memories. It pulls together my books. It pulls together everything that I love if I had to put it in a backpack. So it would be the love. It would be the phone. It would be the connection. And that's what we need now more than ever is connection. You know, we're disconnecting from humanity. And real quick, what I will say that I didn't get into is the artificial intelligence piece.
All right.
You know, we keep talking about diversity. Diversity is great. Fine. Everybody wants to talk about diversity and inclusion. If we expand the conversation to humanity, it shifts it and it opens up some people who wouldn't have the diversity conversation. So when I talk about humanity. So we talk about love. It's got to be love of humanity, which will include nature. You know, one of the things that I started doing because of the pandemic is walking 5 miles a day. I was real good from March to October, fell off. And now I'm just getting back into, you know, maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour a day walking.
I'm sure you were like, damn, how long is this pandemic going to go for?
Well, you know, but the funny thing, Carrie, is this. I haven't been outside this much since I was 15. Because the day I got, you know, I got my license on my 16th birthday. So there the bike went, walking went, running outside went when I started driving. Mm. And now I go from, when I was going to school, I go from garage to garage. So I literally could go days with never being outside.
But the one thing I miss about being on a campus is they have usually a beautiful, like, outside, lots of places to walk.
And our campus is gorgeous. And so real quick, Andrew Huberman says, go outside every day, at least for 30 minutes to get fresh air and to reset your eyes. Because we're on digital devices so much, we need to see the sunrise and sunset so that our eyes can readjust. Fresh air, obviously, is what we need. And I've always wondered, have the birds always been singing this loud? Of course they were. I just wasn't paying attention. So in the growth and healing process of learning that you're adopted, learning that your relationship ends, whatever the case may be, we have to go within and we have to forgive ourselves, forgive others, and love everybody we come in contact with.
Except because, that guy, honestly, who ghosted you, he can suck it.
Man, you know what? We're going to cross paths again.
You and the guy.
Because we're in the same industry. You know, it's going to come back around.
And that guy can suck it.
So go outside. Dave Davies
says clowns ballooning.
And thank you, Dave Delaney. Chris. Thank you, Dave Delaney, for connecting us. Thank you, Dave Delaney. My favorite Canadian. I love you, Dave Delaney. And I love Canadians because they always helped enslaved Africans. And I talk about that in the book, too.
Dave is a Canadian ginger.
Yeah, so he has two afflictions.
afflictions.
That's hilarious. He's going to get you for that. I didn't say superpowers.
And I'm on his nice podcast today saying mean things about him on my mean podcast.
I think Dave Delaney is lovely. So
he's
be nice.
Lovely. Okay. You know, I was thinking about your thing about going outside and all that, and especially in the minute you said about birds. My grandmother did not like going outside very much, but also because she had a really strange relationship with birds. And let me tell you, my grandmother was known in pictures to point a lot. Well, let me tell you what a bird did when she pointed many times.